a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
House Education Committee will come to order. The internet is on, so welcome, internet listeners. Welcome, everybody, this morning. Just a reminder, turn off your cell phones and or turn them on vibrate and ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representative Elliott, Hager.
Here.
Hunt.
Here.
Jones. Killer.
Here.
Lucas.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
Schaefer.
Here.
Strickers.
Here.
Tolson.
Here.
Bannerman.
Here.
Venner.
Here.
Sly.
Here.
Bruner.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there's a quorum.
Quorum is present. The minutes of the previous meeting, what's your pleasure?
Second.
Move to adopt by Lucas, second by Vanneman. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Just remind everybody who wants to wishes to testify today to sign in at the podium there at the door. And we have two bills on our agenda today. For all intents and purposes, they are the same bill. I'm going to reverse the order. Take the governor's bill first, and then we'll deal with this with the second one appropriately. But with that, I would open public testimony for House Bill 1229.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tony Venhuizen from the Governor's Office, and I'm here today to ask you to support House Bill 1229. House Bill 1229 is a bill that the Governor introduced, and it's all about local control. As you know, this bill would repeal the rule that was put in place several years ago that requires that a school district be dissolved and reorganized when its K to 12 student enrollment goes below 100 students. One of the guiding principles that the governor has as we deal with education is the principle of local control. We've already passed through the Senate a bill that repeals the reserve fund balance cap for schools. That's part of his effort to give more local control to these school districts. That's passed through the Senate, and I assume you'll be seeing it here in this committee. The governor has also directed the Department of Education to work with school districts to identify state regulations that can be modified or repealed to give schools more flexibility and more local control. In addition, the Department of Education has been testifying against bills that would increase regulation on the schools. There's no truth to the rumor that Melody Shop's being recruited by BFM, but she has become good at testifying against legislation this year. Speaking specifically about this bill, this is a bill that would allow local decision makers to decide when and if it's appropriate for their district to reorganize. I know that one of the concerns about this bill is the fiscal impact that it has because of the small school factor. I would remind you, first of all, that because these districts are so small, the impact on the state through the small school factor is relatively minimal. In fact, if a school district with 100 students closes and reorganizes and consolidates with a larger district, the maximum impact that that could have on the rest of the state is less than $1 per student. In addition to that, you have to remember that in many cases, these small school districts would consolidate with another small school district. So in all likelihood, they'll still continue to receive some, if not all, of the small school factor. And finally, once these districts get as small as 100 students or less, I think that we should be able to trust that the local decision makers will make the best decision for their students. In some cases, certainly, that would involve greater cooperation or even consolidation with another district. But the governor firmly believes that that's a decision that we should trust the parents and teachers and administrators to make. The third point I'd like to make is this. I know that some of you were in the legislature when this rule was put into effect, that you were asked at that time to cast a tough vote in favor of this rule. I appreciate that, and the governor appreciates that. I think it's fair to say that the circumstances have changed since then for a couple reasons. Certainly some of the smallest school districts who were near the 100 minimum have been reorganized under the current law. Particularly, one of the primary motivations of the 100 student minimum was to target what were called tax haven districts that did not have schools and had very few students and simply remained in existence to keep their property taxes very low to receive more state aid and then just contracted with another district. Those tax havens are gone because they were forced to reorganize by this law. At this point, the governor believes that especially at a time when we are asking schools to be more efficient, we should also give them the flexibility and the respect to local decision makers to make their own decisions. So in conclusion, I would just ask you to give favorable consideration to House Bill 1229. I'll stand by for questions. But I have Melody Schopp here with me, and I know she would like to answer questions far more than I would. So, thank you.
Other proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Melody Schopp, Department of Education. There's not much I can add to Mr. Van Huysen's testimony. The only thing, just a couple points I want to bring up. When this law was passed and we set the number at 100, it truly was an arbitrary number. And so if you remember a lot of the discussion that went on amongst the legislators at that time, we talked about what was appropriate. Was 100? Was it 200? In fact, if I would look back last night and there was another bill that came out at that point in time asking for 200 to begin with, and I think that was negotiated down. And the other point Mr. Van Huysen brought up that I think is really important is that these are really difficult decisions for communities to make, very difficult decisions for communities to make. But sometimes it's much easier if they're able to do that on their own time frame, under their own circumstances as they go forward. And so this really allows those districts, rather than the department and whether or not and the state coming in and determining that they need to be closed once they hit that 100 mark, to make that on their own time frame and under their own circumstances. So we really would like to strongly support this bill and going back to the local control decisions that the district has to make. I know the first question you're going to ask, and so I'm going to answer one in advance before I sit down. The districts that did reorganize as a result of the 100 minimum, and these were Carthage, Condi, Greater Hoyt, Greater Scott, Harold, Northwest, Pollock, Polo, and Wood. And so those were the nine that we actually sent the letters to and did reorganize as a result of the 100 law before. So I do stand by for questions.
Thank you. Other proponents of House Bill 1229.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Wayne Leaders with Associated School Boards. We, too, are strongly in favor of supporting this bill. When the minimum 100-student requirement was put into the law, we were strong opponents against that particular piece of legislation for all kinds of reasons. One, it was very, very arbitrary, just selecting a single number. Our association is in favor of reorganization, but it should be voluntary. It should be at the will of the people of the school district and the school board, and it should be focused on benefits for the student. It should take into consideration geographic issues and geographic areas. So we would strongly encourage the changing of this particular piece of legislation. There's also another piece of it. It's on the second page, and it's a section that talks about whole grade sharing. And we worked with legislators several years ago to have some flexibility placed in this bill, which allows school districts to share between school districts that are presently in existence whole grades of students. And this is presently there. It created some additional flexibility. And once again, it's focused on what's best for the kids and what's best for the students in those school districts. the other areas that have come up because of this piece of legislation and has been testified in front of this committee in years past is this issue of the fear factor. Because as a school district starts getting smaller, as a school district starts getting to the 120, 115, 110, they start looking for other alternatives, such as possibly open enrollment and having students come into their school districts to maintain that 100-student minimum. This will relieve that pressure from the negative piece, from the discipline piece of this piece of legislation, and have them focus on what's best for kids and focus on the best questions that local school districts should be focused on. So, again, we would strongly support the bill as it's written, providing local control to local school districts and school boards to make these types of decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Charlie Flowers, registered lobbyist for the Coalition of Schools and the Mid-Sized Schools. We also support this. I think when I've noticed in some of these smaller schools, when they get close to reorganization, the first thing that happens, they start kind of co-oping with their athletic programs, and that, and then when it comes to the time when they reorganize, the kids are kind of mingled together already, and communities have started working together, so it's really a local control issue, and we'd urge the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Scott Swear, I represent the Small School Alliance here in South Dakota. Pleasure to be here today. I've testified in front of most of you as my former role as the Assistant Attorney General for the state. But I'm no longer with the Attorney General's office, but I appreciate your time this morning, and I'm actually liking private lobbying, if you can believe that. It's actually pretty fun. We, of course, are in favor of the bill. We think that the local control is extremely important for our small schools. At the time that the bill, as Mr. Van Huysen said, at the time that this bill was originally passed, there were different circumstances in both the nation and, most importantly, in the state. So we would ask you to support the bill. The Small School Alliance thinks that this is a good bill, and we would ask your favorable recommendation of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Bryce Hinney, the Executive Director of the South Dakota Association, here this morning to offer a Me Too and proud to be on the same team as the Governor's office. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Sorry, what the best way to do that is. I think a community, too, will rally around their school more than they would rally around any other single issue in their community. So I think by leaving this in place, schools will do everything they need to do and communities will do everything they need to do to make sure that they can educate their kids in the best manner possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1229? Seeing none, I'm going to hand the gavel over to my vice chair and speak in opposition to this bill. Morning, Madam Chair. The committee looks great from this side, too.
Good morning.
Well, as I begin my testimony, I'm certainly mindful that you know, the governor has made this part of his campaign, but there's an awful lot of facts that were left out today. When we brought this in a few years ago, we brought it in as a package. It's very easy to think that if we had brought this in as just a standalone piece of legislation, that what were we thinking? Were we just being mean to small schools and we're arbitrarily picking a number that we just wanted schools to close? Well, this was brought in as a package. For 20-plus years before we did this, there was summer study after summer study. How do we make education funding more efficient? How do we make some meaningful changes that will help schools that are struggling, and how do we make some changes that to make it fair for everybody? Well, the thing that that happened is we brought in declining enrollment, which helped a certain number of schools. We brought in the increasing enrollment portion that helped other schools. But there were some big schools that it didn't do anything for. There was a lot of schools in the northwest part of our state that didn't do a lot for. They were stable, but they're sparse. I mean, they're 20-plus miles from the next school. And how do we tie all that together and put something in a package for everybody? And that's where we brought in this part of the legislation, where we sought to close some small, inefficient schools. And you ask, how did that happen? How did that add any efficiency? Well, a lot of these small schools obviously were tax havens. They were enjoying the benefits without fairly paying their share of the taxes. And this was the piece that was used to bring the large schools in, because obviously this money that was saved put back into formula, and we were able to raise the tide for everybody. Everybody enjoyed more money. And these were years, obviously, unlike this year, where there was some extra dollars, and we sought to put them in education, but we wanted to put them in places that was really needed. And this was the piece that was buy-in from the big schools. This is what brought us all together. Now, a few years later, obviously, you can't be responsible for what we did a few years ago. You have to look at it in terms of, you know, changing a piece at a time. But as these other bills come before us to do away with the increasing or declining enrollment, we fought those back, because those schools have learned to depend on those funds, and nobody wants to change that. The other thing I might add is, as we look at the minimums for small schools, and we talk about the miles in between, well, that's not really correct, because sparse schools are exempt from this this number of, you know, when they hit that, they don't have to, if they're more than 15 miles or the other parameters, they don't have to abide by that, because they've already done their share. And I might add that the school district I'm from, Newell, is a conglomeration of several small schools that early in the 60s, there actually was a minimum school size. I'm not sure if it was then, but in our past we've had minimum school size numbers, and we've lived with it. But it's all about economics. And when some farm economy was kind of upside down in the early 60s in that area, a lot of the small schools closed. They didn't necessarily close all at once. They took the high school, first joined that, and then the grade school later on. And we've certainly learned to live with that. But in my case, it meant being instead of 2 miles from a school that was certainly small and inefficient, to 11 miles to a school that's a little bit bigger and inefficient. So it didn't, in some cases, it didn't really change. And they're struggling also. But they have kind of reached a plateau as to their school size, and this in no way even affects them. But that's some of the history that's gone into this. And I want to just add that, you know, this was done to put money in the formula for all schools. And I think it's done that. The numbers I can't attest to. Some of the testimony has been a dollar. I would probably could find evidence to think it's a lot more than that. But, you know, as we brought this forward several years ago, it was painful because everybody was we were trying to help everybody, but everybody had to feel the pain. And in the meantime, we fought back several instances where the schools like Condi and Greater Hoyt, Greater Scott came in and wanted a carve out, and we successfully fought those back because it wasn't fair to give certain schools once we had passed this to give certain schools a way out of this. Everybody, this is what we did, and we were sticking by it. Now it seems like we want to peel off. You know, we had a balanced plate, so to speak. We had the meat and potatoes, and we had the peas. But now we're kind of want to flick those peas off the side because they weren't very appetizing. But this I'm talking about fairness, I think this is unfair to a lot of the large schools to start peeling this part out. The medium-sized schools certainly have fought to keep in the declining enrollment portion of this. So I think it's a matter of fairness. And I think to put this, you know, the governor made a campaign promise to do this. I think that was ill-advised. I think there wasn't a lot of thought, not necessarily on the governor's part, but on his advisor's part to do that. To me, that rings hollow. And I think we need to look back at some history and appreciate that and appreciate what people have gone through. So with that, I felt as nobody else was going to oppose this, I needed to step up and do that. So your indulgence. Thank you.
Are there any other opponents? No other opponents? Seeing none, would you like a rebuttal?
Tony Van Huysen with the governor's office, excuse me. There's a lot of things we can do for the larger schools. The math would say that a school that is not receiving the small school factor that's large enough would get between 80 cents and a dollar per student. That would mean that Sioux Falls, who has a budget of $100 million, would get about $15,000 to $20,000 for every school district that's closed under this bill. I don't think that you make your own candle burn brighter by blowing out someone else's. So I would ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
The chair closes testimony on this, and we'll open it up for questions. Representative Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it was Melanie or Tony or somebody. How many districts are in play here? What are we talking about in terms of the potential impact of this, should we do it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we ran some data for those who are under 150, so they're within close. And I can list them for you. There's a number of them that are sparse, but there'd be 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 districts that are between 100 and 150. That are right on the bubble there, so that gives you some idea.
Hello?
And these include sparse?
No, I these took out the sparse districts. Okay. I excluded those. There's another five districts that are, four that meet the sparsity, and then there's one that's exempt. Elk Mountain's exempt from that, so that would be another close to 20.
Any other questions? Representative Benner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Same vein, but whether this bill stays or goes, those schools you've just mentioned, this doesn't have any effect, am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vander, the impact would be that if they did get close to 100, if they did get underneath
right.
that 100, so, you know, they're wavering on the mark. We have one here, 117, so 17 students, so I know that they were somewhat concerned, 119. So we have a few. If you're looking at those that are right at the 125 to 100, there's six of them. So, again, that's just teetering on the edge there.
Follow up. If you were going to, okay, we talked dollars a little bit. Is there going to be a shift though from large schools to small schools dollars? If this law was to go away.
Mr. Chairman, remember that we pay per student, so we fund, you know, on a per student allocation, and so to the state, the cost savings doesn't change. The kids are going to be they're going to be repositioned in different, you know, so the cost savings is not really realized, other than if it changes the small school factor by any percentage. But we pay per student. We don't pay per school building.
One more follow-up. I know this is a kind of an off-the-wall question, but just in a philosophical step back from it and look at it with this gone, in your opinion, you know, with your helicopter top-down view, does this maybe change in any way the perceptions across the board in terms of reorganization? In other words, if we take this out of the equation, the playing field is now wide open. What does that do in terms of, in your mind, the future and how people look at reorganizing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Venner, I think it's basically what I alluded to before, that it's difficult. Reorganization is difficult for any community to embrace, regardless. It's not an easy thing to do. The school is oftentimes the hub of that community itself. But it is much easier, I believe, that I don't think this is going to, you know, these schools are getting close. In fact, I watched one of them last night on TV discuss, you know, they're one of the ones who are on the bubble. And they're already sharing some teachers. They're sharing some their sport activities as well. But for them to be able to have time to think through this thoughtfully, make decisions with another community and have that time without the pending gloom and doom with this coming down on them quickly. Mr. Luders had a good point, too, that a lot of times as they get closer, the panic sets in, you know, whether they try to entice students from other districts, which can be problematic as well and set some animosity between districts. So I think just giving them time to be able to work through those things together as they see that those are pending, I don't think it's going to change what's happening in the state. I think it's just going to really really reiterate the governor's message of local control, thinking thoughtfully through the process. So.
Any other questions? Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Madam Secretary, Section 2 of the bill, we've added in there that they have to offer an instructional program within the boundaries of the school district. Is that, and obviously some of these small schools are going to offer classes by distance learning. So is that an attempt to say that they have to offer the curriculum within the district? And what would be the guidelines as far as getting some classes online?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lucas, this refers to the whole grade sharing statute. So if you go beyond that, where it says, notwithstanding the provisions of this, a school board of a district that offers an instructional program within the boundaries of the school district may enter into an agreement with another district to do the whole grade sharing. So it's not changing. They are still able to use distance courses, et cetera. This statute is specifically referring to the whole grade sharing.
Yes.
As a follow-up, then, could the school offer all the classes, say, for high school curriculum online and have the virtual high school? I think there's one of those occurring in the state now.
Mr. Chairman, yes, they may do that already, Representative Lucas.
Follow-up?
No, I think you've a follow-up. Yeah, thank you. Isn't there a rule, then, as far as how they're counted for a student per student allocation, that they have to take X amount of classes so they can't just be enrolled for one course and get the whole per student allocation?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do prorate based on the number of courses or classes throughout the day.
Any more? Representative Lucas? Oh, okay. Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
A question for Mr. Van Huysen. Mr. Van Huysen, I was here in the legislature when a relatively complicated arrangement was made that was referred to by Representative Bruner. It took an awful lot of time and study and graphs and so on and so forth, and this particular issue eliminating schools under 100, school districts under 100, was a key part of that. It's very difficult now to be able to say that deal we can set aside, and I'm having a personal problem in doing that. I understand the local control issue. I understand the governor's reasons and logic for this, but I'm troubled by the fact that we're doing a 180-degree turn on an arrangement that was made after a lot of negotiations. Having said that, my question is, in your comments, you referenced that maybe there is something that can be done for the large schools. If we're going to take this portion of the contribution to this or consideration to this particular bill, what's the governor thinking about replacing it with to continue the deal, if you would? You mentioned that the governor may be able to do something. What's the thought process? What are we thinking about?
Thank you, Representative, for your question. Certainly the governor is open to suggestions from the large schools. What I had in mind when I said that was thinking about the openness that he has shown to changing state law or changing regulations in ways that allow schools to be more flexible or more efficient. Obviously, the governor met with the Sioux Falls superintendent last week, as some of you may have heard. He also met with, less well reported, was he met with the large school group, which was a dozen of the superintendents from the other large schools, or most of them. And in both of those meetings, and really in particular in the meeting with the 12 superintendents, they talked a lot about ways that that those superintendents are bringing forward or will be bringing forward to work with the Department of Education. In large schools in particular, they have a lot of opportunities to be more flexible and more innovative, and they need to be either given waivers or have regulations changed to allow them to do that. And some of that work is ongoing. That was what I had in mind when I said that, sir.
Follow up?
Yes.
Can you be more specific? Give me a couple of examples. You know, if I'm going to give up something as a result of a compromise, I'd kind of like to know what I'm having in return. Do you have any more specifics other than...
Well, I know Dr. Schopp has been working with them on the specifics. With your indulgence, I'd ask her if she'd like to address that.
That would be fine.
Okay.
Dr. Schopp?
I'll stay up here in case...
That might be a good idea.
Pardon me. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hunt, we have met, and it's not just even with just the large districts itself, but there have been a number of conversations among some of the superintendents, and I need to give them a lot of credit for coming forward, requesting ways in which we can support their ideas of innovation. So I'm going to give you some real specific things. They're really looking to really promote 21st century schools, and there's a coalition of schools. And these are not all large schools. Some of them are smaller schools who are looking for almost what we would call a laboratory school. And I know that term is used rather loosely, in which they would be promoting, again, the 21st century skills, whether it's with sharing teachers innovatively through distance learning, which we can already do, but using such things as this. I met the other day with the Sanford Lab, and they have opportunities for teachers to offer classes actually in the laboratory type of setting, going into the laboratory schools, into the labs within Sioux Falls itself. When I'm talking about ways in which the department can support that, a lot of times we have rules that require either a certified teacher, where you might have a certified nurse, a doctor, et cetera. We would be able to offer waivers to allow that to happen. Another example that I have that is currently happening right now in Sioux Falls, for instance, they have a Spanish immersion class. And it's for grades K through 2, I believe it is. And there was issues with certification again because we didn't have a certified elementary Spanish teacher. And so we were able to allow them to use their Spanish-speaking individual and allowed a waiver that they could use that individual to teach these K through 2 grades without putting additional requirements that person to go back and get their elementary degree. And so those are just a couple examples, small examples, in which we, as we're looking and asking schools to step up, really look for efficiencies and innovation that we can support them in ways of offering waiver authority, which we do have, to allow them to operate in that sense without putting additional requirements on them.
One.
Yes, sir.
Any other areas other than the waivers? I hear the waivers, but and I can see that can help a little bit, but anything more significant?
I could go into this whole Mid-Central Co-op is working with a number of districts in which, and this maybe not even just in waiver authority, but really helping them to think outside the box as far as sharing staff and teachers. The best of the best, if you've got the best French teacher in one district and you've got the best chemistry teacher in the other district, in helping them and pulling them together and talking about ways in which they can make those things happen. And I think just showing our support for that, it's a larger concept that they're pulling together. And so those are ways in which they're looking at really making their schools look different than they did in the traditional way. And so I don't know if that's enough of a it's a much larger concept they're working on. Some I would love to have them share their ideas with you in whole as far as what they're trying to do.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from the committee? I have a question for Representative Bruner, and that is, from your perspective, when we look at the cost, it's been stated that it would be 80 cents to a dollar that would make a difference in the cost. Could you share what's your perspective on that?
If I might answer from here, is that
yes,
is that
that's
fine?
Correct. You
thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. I obviously, when we talk about small schools, the term inefficient comes up. And the reason that we consider them inefficient is because of the small school factor. Obviously, when we froze that in the past couple of years where it's at $600 and some dollars, it's at 20%. Small schools are allowed to add 20% more students to their rolls just to get more money. But as the small schools join with neighboring schools, they become larger. And so that small school factor goes away. And once they get above, I believe, 600, there's no small school at all. So it affords us a great opportunity to put that $600 per student, or that $600+ per student, back into the formula and raise the tide for everybody. And I've yet to hear of any suggestions that would equal that at all. We've got some concept ideas that obviously will help in the long run, but there's really nothing to replace that. And I would prefer that if we're going to do away with a small school with that minimum size, that we do it as a package, just the way we brought it in. Let's adjust declining and increasing enrollment. Let's adjust the small school factor. Let's have buy-in from everybody instead of peeling out one part of this and having no buy-in. I don't think it's fair that we peel out one part of this and have no real buy-in. I would prefer we take a long look at what we're doing over the summer and come back with a package rather than peeling out one part of this, rather than flicking the parsley or the peas off the plate and just keeping the meat. We need to have buy-in from everybody. So the dollars are certainly there to help raise the tide for everybody if we keep this law in place.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? I will close the questions, and we'll move into committee discussion and or action. Representative Lucas.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll move due pass.
Is there a second? Moved by Representative Lucas, seconded by Representative Killer. We will now, is there any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was one that was here, I think, in 2007 when we put the rule in for the minimum size at 100, and the testimony was correct. I think it started at 200. I think there had been a summer study prior to that, and a number of legislators were looking at these efficiencies in school size, and eventually it was agreed to that the 100 threshold would pass. And as a good representative from Brandon indicated, it was wasn't an easy vote for those that voted for the bill. I'm sure of that. And it is difficult. You know, I've always said that it's very for a legislative body to try to say what size of school or how school should be is gets very political. It'd be easier, quite frankly, if if the governor or the administration could just draw the school district boundary lines and say this is what they're going to be, and like the county lines are, because the school district lines are like a jigsaw puzzle. But nonetheless, in the absence of that, the best alternative is let schools and local communities decide what kind of school they want, if they want to use distance learning, if they want to co-op with other adjacent or nearby communities and schools and share staff. Eventually, the small schools, as the population diminishes, if in fact that's what's happening, the school will go. In some cases, there's some economic development coming back in some of the small communities now because of wind energy development, for example. So, while they may drop down under that threshold we had established, there may be the opportunity where that would come up over that. And once a school district is dissolved, it's very difficult for it to come back. So I would urge that we would honor the bill that the governor's brought forth and let the local communities decide how they want to educate their children the best.
Are there any other comments? Representative Venner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support this bill. Local control is important. But I also think I know I want to publicly just volunteer right now to be a part of a study group if one forms, as Representative Bruner has suggested. It seems like if we eliminate this requirement, Representative Bruner makes a good argument for the number being 600. I'm not, again, that's not an amendment, all right? But it seems like maybe this is a good step to level the playing field, and we do need to study this and have that study group, as Representative Bruner has suggested, and look at the big picture and see what needs to be done in the future. Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to go back a little bit. I went to a country school. We had 18 to 20 students. Then I went to Bryant High School, a little larger school. The other country school closed, and then the Bryant High School closed, and we consolidated and made Hamlin School District. It was a district made up of four towns, and it was a tough thing to do, but it's very good. Our education is very good, and that was done by local control. And I like the idea of the governor with the idea of cluster, like our cooperative extension service, using the best people to share. So, thank you.
Any other comments? If not, the motion on the floor is due pass, and we will have a roll call vote.
Representative Elliott? Hager?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Jones?
Oh, isn't it?
Killer?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Miller?
Yes.
Perry?
Aye.
Schaefer?
Aye.
Strickers?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
Venner?
Aye.
Sly?
No.
Bruner?
No.
Miller?
No.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, there are 10 yeas, three nays, two excused.
Okay. House Bill 1229 passed. Do we take this next bill, or do we?
Is Representative Blake Representative Lucas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blake gave me House Bill 1091, and assuming that outcome of the other other bill, she would just ask that this be tabled in.
Thank you. We have a request from the author of 1091 that the bill be tabled. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sly.
I move that we table House Bill 1091.
A motion, second by Miller. It's a non-debatable motion. I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representative Elliott. Hager.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jones. Killer.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Perry.
Aye.
Schaefer.
Aye.
Strickers.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Bannerman.
Aye.
Benner.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 12 yeas, 2 excused.
Motion carried. House Bill 1091 is tabled. Brings us to the end of our agenda. Representative Perry, have you got something?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I would like to make the appropriate motion to bring House Bill 1093 off the table, and if that passes, then I can discuss why.
We have a motion and a second to bring 1093 off the table. Comments on your motion?
Thank you. As you may recall, we had a conversation about 1208 on Monday in this committee, which was an efficiency bill for the K-12 public education system. And it was Representative Gosch's bill. It was a vehicle bill that he was going to put the guts in after some conversations with people in the Department of Education. If you may recall, at that time I asked him about the whole educational continuum being part of that legislation. My orientation is that we ought to start talking about education as the whole continuum and not just in silos. I met yesterday with Representative Gosch and pursued that conversation with him. And the net result, and we also met with Jack Warner from the Board of Regents, the conclusion of that conversation was to find a companion bill for post-secondary education institutions where we could remove mandates and gain efficiencies at this point in time. And so what I would ask the committee to do is to bring that bill off the table. That was Scott Musterman's bill. Representative Musterman's bill that dealt with efficiencies in the consolidation of service districts. And I've talked with Representative Musterman about that, and he was agreeable that we could use that bill to put together basically the same model that Gosch had with the K-12, a vehicle bill. Dr. Warner is having conversations with people on the second floor about several ideas that that he would like to pursue that might give him some efficiencies in how they operate. And I would like to be able to move this bill out of committee, since this is the last day that we have an opportunity to do that, and get it to the floor, and as we get to next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, try to have the guts ready to go. And should that not happen, then I'd be glad to table that bill on the floor and get rid of it if we don't have the proper guts. And I've also asked the folks in the technical institutes to see if there are things that they want to insert as well. So I do have an amendment if we get it off the table for 1093.
Okay. Other comments? Seeing none, I think this is appropriate. We have a and in pulling this bill off the table, obviously this is the last day before a crossover that we have the opportunity to do that. And and having to go through the process, I think it's appropriate that we could pull this off the table, amend it immediately, take it up today, amend it immediately, so that we don't have 1093 out there floating in cyberspace and people seeing what we did and sending in 4,000 emails after we killed it. So I would encourage the committee to vote to take this off the table, takes a simple majority, and then we'll have an amendment and go from there. So with that, the motion is to pull 1093 off the table and put it on the agenda immediately. I would ask that the secretary call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representative Elliott? Hager?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Jones?
No.
Nikhiller?
No.
Lucas?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Perry?
Aye.
Schaefer?
Aye.
Strickers?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
Benner?
Aye.
Sly?
Aye.
Bruner?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 11 yeas, 3 nays, 1 excuse.
Motion carries. 1093 is on the table, calendared, or on the agenda, I should say. Representative Perry, you have a...
I have an amendment. I'd like to move 1093 CA that is being distributed.
You have a motion and a second. Comments on your motion?
As I noted, this is simply the language says that we will utilize this bill to remove mandates for the post-secondary technical institutes and Board of Regents institutions to operate more economically. The kinds of things that Dr. Warner and Representative Gosch were talking about that we'll visit with so that you get some sense of it. There are some regulations and statute about the engineering services and at what level you need to have the engineering services from the state. Right now it's at $25,000 and above. It may well be that this has been in statute like for 20 years and it's time to move that up and let the folks who operate the campuses do some of those things without having to come through the hoops of the engineer office. There's also a process by which all computing-related purchases have to go through a process to get approval from the state BIT. And this is what they call a moratorium process, and if you're not under their exact kinds of guidelines, then you have to get some exception. This is a large paperwork process that really is kind of meaningless because the exceptions generally go through or have always gone through. This is a process that may not be terribly efficient that we might be able to eliminate with some adjustment. The other area that Dr. Warner was interested in is the purchasing of broadband and telecommunication services. There may well be areas where the institutions can get these cheaper than what we now do through central state system. And if that's the case, then I think the interest is letting the institutions get the cheaper service. I think that just makes good economic sense for everybody. It puts the more competitive situation on the table. So I think those are the kinds of things that he wants to pursue with conversations with Second Floor and see if they can work those out.
Thank you. Other comments?
Question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So, Representative Perry, the engineering services, are you going to, so they could not have to hire an engineer and set that limit higher, is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's the question of coming through the state engineer office to get approval for everything. They hire engineers and architects to do most of their projects anyway. So they're working with a group already. This is the approval process that they have to go through and give them a little more freedom to do that without having to come through that whole process.
Other questions or comments? Yeah. Representative Lucas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm always leery of these last-minute changes on bills. I tend to oppose them. I understand the intent of good representatives bringing, but my main concern is this. We had a campaign all summer talked about the budget, and we knew we were going to have budget cuts, and things weren't going to go on as usual. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to identify these inefficiencies, you know. So I guess my question is, why weren't our Board of Regents and tech schools identifying these inefficiencies before we even had the budget, which was been, you know, put in December, and then we had a new budget when the new governor came in January? So you know, I just think that this is maybe a political bill. I don't know, but I don't see a lot of substance to it.
Well, I would disagree. Finding efficiencies is our job. If we didn't do it 10 years ago, it's like planting a tree. The best time was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. And, you know, the fact that we maybe missed the boat doesn't mean that we can't come back and make some corrections and do something. I don't see anything political about it. I think it's all our incumbent on all of us to look for those areas where we can gain some efficiency. And sometimes you don't force that until the dollars are pulled away. And, you know, certainly the dollars are going to be pulled away this year in a lot of instances. So I would certainly support this going forward. I might just add, the question was brought up. The bill originally, 1093, was sent to the 41st day and not tabled. Really is the same difference. It takes a simple majority to bring it back off the table. So it... Okay. So basically the difference, I guess, would be that it was reconsidered and not removed from the table. So I would assume that our motions would reflect that. And
that's what I meant.
That's what I thought, that's what I heard. But it's the same thing. Essentially, you know, nothing changes as far as the vote or anything, and our intentions are the same. But thank you for bringing that to my attention. With that, we have a motion to amend 1093 with 1093 CA, and this is just a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carried. 1093 is so amended. Which brings us to the point where we have an amended 1093 to deal with.
Move do pass, Mr. Chairman.
I have a motion do pass 1093 as amended, seconded by Venner. Motion was by Perry. Comments on your motion?
I think I've already gone through it.
Thank you. Other comments? Representative Miller.
I'd just like to say on all this discussion that we've had today, can I address any of it?
Sure.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from, Representative Lucas. Actually, as I think about this, including the consolidation situations and all of that, when I was growing up, we had to do this, a lot of this stuff a long time ago in Iowa. And there's a lot more communities there than there is in South Dakota. But as all the what came to mind was, as all the circumstances change over the years, I can see where things have to be readdressed. Nothing stays the same. Population doesn't stay the same. Economics doesn't stay the same. And we are in a boat where we really do have to, in this economic time, we really do have to be creative and stay open and just try to halfway trust each other to come up with solutions and try to stay on the same page. And so as the point is, this won't be the last time that things change. You know, they're going to change again in 5 or 10 years, possibly. I mean, who knows? May start having more children, may have a lot more money in the state. So I just think it's really great if we could just really stay as a team on all of this and try to stay on the same page. And I think that's what we're really struggling to do. But I think all this discussion today was really good and beneficial. And it really brought a lot of points to light, both from Representative Bruner's standpoint and the Board of Education, the governor's office, inserting ideas back into keeping something open that we can have time to think through to get ideas back into it. So I just wanted to say teamwork. Thank you.
Thank you. You make some good points. And the fact is that talk about change in maybe 5 to 10 years, I think that'd be a luxury. I think we're looking at a yearly thing, you know, for the next few years, especially as we look at budgets and the fiscal impact on communities and because of decisions we make here. So I would just urge the committee to support Representative Perry and his efforts, let's move forward. Other comments? The motion is due pass on 1093 as amended. I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. All in favor will say aye. Opposed, no.
Representative Elliott? Hager?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Jones?
No.
Killer?
No.
Lucas?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Perry?
Aye.
Schaefer?
Aye.
Strickers?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
Benner?
Aye.
Sly?
Aye.
Bruner?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, 11 yeas, 3 nays, 1 excused.
Motion carried, 1093 as amended, is leaves with a due pass recommendation. Do you have one? Okay, we have a title amendment. Would you care to move the title amendment?
I'll move the title amendment.
Motion by
second.
Perry, second by Venner. Would you read the title amendment, Claire?
An act to repeal certain education mandates to allow the post-secondary technical institutes and institutions under the control of the Board of Regents to operate more economically.
Okay, basically it's what the title says, and the rest will be filled in later. So. Okay, we have a motion to adopt the title amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Title is so amended. Somebody should probably tell Representative, was that a cell phone? Oh.
Who was it?
Somebody should probably tell Representative Munsterman that he actually got a bill out of Education Committee today.
I'll be happy to read it.
With that, is there anything else that needs to come before this committee? This takes does take care of all of our House bills. I think next week, are you in Appropriations Wednesday? Next Wednesday? I may just not post a meeting and encourage this committee to go and listen in to, I think it would be very educational for our committee maybe offer some support for you and what you're doing. And I might just add, since we have somebody here from the governor's office, that the shop needs to be on a permanent basis. With that, is there anything else that needs to come before this committee? If not, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion by Hunt, second by Sly. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. We are adjourned.